Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. This is our monthly talk show. I'm here with Tom and Melissa Gould and Fran Ginsberg. I'm Bob Ginsberg. And tonight's topic, I'm sure, is going to be the skeptics among us. And we're going to be talking about common arguments that we hear all the time. I'm sure you do. We hear it. And we'll talk about which comments have merit and which don't. And before we get started, Fran, catch us up.
I'll catch up. We have some really exciting stuff, so listen up, everybody. Coming up this month, lots of stuff. November 6th, we've got an afterlife discussion group in Sanibel, Florida from 2 to 4 p.m. That's free. On November 10th, we are going to broadcast this wonderful radio show, Signs of Life Radio, live from the Afterlife Explorers and Mediumship Convention in Fort Myers, Florida. Seats are free if you happen to be around there, or if you'd like to fly to Florida just to sit in on the radio show. And while you're there, the radio show kicks off the week of November 11th through 13th, with starting out with Night of Mediums on Friday night. That's one medium at each table of 10 doing spirit communication following dinner, for only those 10 people at the table. And then we have the two-day convention of mediumship, November 12th and 13th. And then on Saturday night, we have Laura Lynn Jackson, author of New York Times bestseller, The Light Between Us, and certified medium with Forever Family Foundation. She will conduct spirit communication for those lucky dinner guests on Saturday night, November 12th. And a very special fun dinner we have on Sunday night, Strut Your Stuff. On November 13th, where our non-certified mediums will display spirit communication to those fortunate dinner guests. And we have a panel of judges, which happen to be our certified medium.
Oh.
We're going to be giving them pointers, just like American Idol.
Wow.
Excellent.
I like that one.
And let's see, November 12th, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, our online meeting of the Visionary Explorers Group. And we wrap up the month on November 30th from 6:45 to 8:45 p.m. with the Afterlife Discussion Group in Cold Spring Harbor, New York. Just want to remind everybody, we do receive a lot of emails saying most of our events are on the East Coast. So let's clear this up now. All of our events are not on the East Coast. Our events are where we have volunteers to run this 100% volunteer organization. So if you want more things where you are and you happen to not be on the East Coast, all you really have to do is become one of those dedicated volunteers. And for that, you can click on the volunteer tab on our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. We have just added a Holidays Past event in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, with mediums Janet Nohavik and Joe Scheel on December 10th at 7 p.m. Yep, that's an East Coast event.
We have volunteers there.
And our annual Holidays Past raffle is also up on our site. Please buy some chances to win one or more of 5 one-hour readings with Catherine Nadal, Heidi Jaffe, Tracy Lee Nash, Renata Santarelli, or Lee Ashley. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional nonprofits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, Great Nonprofits, and WellZoo. Visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all events, links, information, and registration. Back to you, Bob.
And that raffle is a global event, right?
Right. You don't have to be on the East Coast to buy those tickets.
Or on our planet.
So I think it's important to talk about skeptics, especially with the work that we do. Sometimes I think that a lot of the, not only the scientists and the researchers and the mediums, but everyday people who have personal experiences are judged way too often by people who are closed-minded skeptics. And I guess a good place to start is to kind of go over what we consider a skeptic to be. I'll be the first to admit that in many different things, not only about the afterlife, but and other life endeavors as well, I would consider myself a skeptic. If you said to me that there was an afterlife, I would give you 10 reasons why you were an idiot. You know, that couldn't be. I think that it's important to be an open-minded skeptic. So for all of us in everything that we do, I mean, don't you agree? I mean,
absolutely.
You can't take everything.
I thought the definition of a skeptic was somebody who was open-minded and accepting, and then argued their point of view.
Right.
That a debunker is really the villain in the work that we do, because it doesn't matter how much evidence you're going to give them, they're going to tell you you're wrong.
I think you're right. You know, so. But somehow we think that of skeptics as being sinister, but maybe not.
I think it's the way our culture and our language has evolved. It's the same way. I know earlier we were discussing, a lot of people refer to the mediums as psychics, and then they'll go to a psychic, and the psychic doesn't connect them to their deceased loved one. Well, because you went to a psychic, you didn't go to a medium. There's a huge difference between them. But because of the culture and the way we believe everything that we see on television, and we believe everything that we read, and we believe everything that somebody says, all of a sudden our language changes to accommodate that. So, you know, a psychic, let's be clear now before we go on with the skeptic stuff, a psychic is not a medium, but a medium can be a psychic. Okay, go on with the skeptic stuff.
I thought what would be good if we can go over some of the things that we hear often, and maybe what we can do is go through some of the evidence that we know exists, and I'll play the role of the skeptic, and we can, you know, talk about that. So common things that we hear, you know, how could you believe in an afterlife? What could possibly survive? You're in the ground, you know, rotting away, so that's it. You know, it's final. That's the feeling of a lot of, you know, of skeptics. I mean, are you confronted with that sometimes by people that you encounter?
Sure. Yeah.
Because it's a hard concept to grasp, isn't it?
I guess it is hard to grasp, and certainly the people who feel that everything revolves around them and what they're thinking at the time feel that once their brain stops thinking, then that's it for you. It's certainly logical, and as you said earlier, that's the way you believe for most of your life,
right?
And I guess most of us have, but that's from our vantage point when we're in this culture of knowing mediums, seeing mediums at work, actually reading books by the scientists who have studied it. There's so much evidence contrary to the skeptical view that it's hard not to believe it. It's harder not to believe from what we know now than it is to just believe.
So it becomes logical for us, you know, to believe. And I think that and we see it all the time, even in these debates among scientists and, you know, so-called, you know, well-known skeptics, is they keep repeating the same thing, that there is no evidence. But then when challenged with the evidence, they don't want to know. They just dismiss it, or they're ignorant of the evidence. I was ignorant of the evidence, and that's why I was a skeptic, because I was not aware of it. So if we could make more, just expose people, you know, to the evidence and not preach and not judge and just let them know, you know, what we've learned, I think that's the best way.
I think that's true, Bob, that people are not aware of it until perhaps they've lost a loved one. They've never even contemplated. You know, when you're alive and you're kind of trained to stay alive. Don't even, you right. know, death is a bad thing. You don't want to die. You want to stay young and healthy and vibrant. But then when they do encounter death, and then some unexplainable things start to happen, that might be when they question it, or they turn a blind eye and say, oh, no, you know, yeah. I'm seeing things. That can't be.
Personal experience is powerful, but just to go back a second to the way in which the message is delivered, we got an email before the show from one of our listeners, Brian in California. I wanted to read you part of it. He just said, I was reading the theme for tonight's radio broadcast, and he wanted to share a couple of things. I've been a skeptic many times in my life, and I remember arguing with people about all kinds of subjects, mostly religion. The most effective means anyone ever had on changing my mind was their character. I remember many times thinking, I don't want to believe what you believe, but I would like to be the kind of person you are. There was nothing like a kind, patient, loving, gentle human being to convince me that this person knew something I didn't know, had experienced things I hadn't experienced, and had something that I wanted. We often mistakenly fall into the trap of arguing with people when we would be best to ask them questions. Believing that everyone has something of value is kind and makes it more likely that the person will want to know what we believe also. I think that's
brilliant.
That's
very, I love that.
That's very insightful.
Yeah.
I love the part about asking people questions,
right.
too, because we are, you know, our back goes up and we're ready to challenge them. But Brian's right.
Yeah.
Ask them questions.
And I think that's something that we find. We have a lot of events and gatherings, and most of the people are not skeptics that are there, but some are, and it's wonderful when they learn about things that just opens a crack, you know, and just...
Well, you make me reflect on the grief retreat a couple of years ago where we had a couple that came, and the wife was a big believer, and the husband came just to support her, but he was the biggest skeptic in the world, and by yeah. the time everybody went home on Sunday, he was a believer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, not like we were sitting there brainwashing. I think we were doing exactly what Brian's talking about, is they were asking questions of all of our facilitators, and they were getting the answers that they needed in order to make up their own mind.
And yeah. no one was bombarding him or at him.
Right.
Yeah, no, nobody ever is forcing anybody to go down any road here. And,
right.
Because I'm kind of in the same boat as Bob, as I, you know, show me, and, you know, I'll keep an open mind, and, you know, if you show me something that alters my belief system, then my belief system will change in that way. One of my experiences along that lines is that I have a brother who's a doctor and a research scientist, and he's all about... you know, in research, you have a hypothesis, and you look at the evidence, and then you draw your conclusions. You don't go in to an experiment already knowing the answer. And he was visiting once, and we had a video of a reading that Laura Lynn Jackson had done for my mother, and we played it for my brother, and there was information that came out that was pertinent to him. And by the end of the hour-long reading that we were watching, he had tears in his eyes, and he said, you know, I can't think of any other scientific explanation for what I just witnessed than that there's right. something to this.
Yeah, well, he's then became an open-minded skeptic.
He's the definition of an open-minded
yeah.
skeptic. And
I think another thing that we hear quite often is the fact that what we do, it's just wishful thinking, that it's just fantasy, and that we can't possibly, you know, we want it to happen, so it happens. We think it happens. But what's interesting is that a lot of the same people who say that it's just fantasy and there's no evidence for it, if you ask them, they'll tell you that they believe in God. And then you say, well, what direct evidence do you have that there's God? And it's just say, well, there's just a knowing, you know, based upon that's my belief, you know. So how it never equated, got the you know.
And I'm not religious, in a organized sense, but I think it's indoctrinated into people. That's a quick answer.
I'm going to take the skeptic side on this, because there are plenty of group readings that we've seen where people are so desperate to hear from their loved ones that when they hear anything, a word or two, they're convinced it's for them, and that, you know, I'm getting this message. And yes, there is piggybacking in reading where you will get messages while somebody else is getting readings. But yeah, there is a lot of wishful thinking, and that's a good point. But if you stay tuned, things will come out that you couldn't possibly have even wished for. That the medium will bring up something that you didn't even know, and you have to go home and you ask a relative, you know, they told me something about this. Is this true? And the other person goes, oh, my God, how did you know that? Yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
There are some things that you just can't make fit. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, there's lots more to talk about when it comes to skeptics. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. We're talking about skeptics and what things that they have to say about the afterlife. There are a lot of different types of evidence that we talk about, you know, all the time. And let's just go through some of them and see, you know, what the skeptical argument is, and then we can discuss it. I mean, a lot of people talk about having dream visits. And we know from surveys it's an incredibly large percentage of people that have, you know, dream visits. So, you know, the skeptic would say, listen, you know, we express ourselves in our dreams subconsciously. You know, we rehash things, we play things out, and these dream visits are just that. They're not real. They're just dreams. What would you say to that?
Well, I've talked about my opinion about dream visits in the past, and I feel like if a loved one comes to you in a dream, and it's quite vivid, and it makes you feel a certain way, and it stays with you, and you can recall it days, weeks, months, years later, I'd say that was a visit. And it could just, it doesn't have to be anything monumental, like revealing anything to you, but it's just a sense that they were with you.
Well, when you start talking about dreams, I think of the old adage, let's sleep on it. When you can't make a decision, just go and sleep on it. That I think that phrase is there for a reason, is that when you're in that dream state, your guides or your people on the other side that have your back, they're there and they're going to come in, they're going to point you in the right direction, help you decide, give you the advice that you need. Wake up in the morning and suddenly you've got an answer to your problem.
An aha.
An aha moment, right?
I mean, it's certainly that's a very difficult one to point to, because there isn't any evidence that you're
right.
Not actually getting a visit. And when I say there isn't any, I'm sort of speaking from the skeptic, and you can't really argue that. However, there's actually a scintilla of evidence, because...
How big is a scintilla?
It's about
this
big.
For those of you...
if you're watching.
For those of you at home. But there are times when you have a visit like that, and then I've seen, or I've personally experienced, or have heard from other people, that when they go to a medium, the medium during the reading will say, oh, and in dream, you know, you dreamed about me just the other night. That was me. So, okay. I mean, how would the medium have known that, other than, you know, I guess there are, down the line, the skeptic will say that
reading your mind.
Mediums have different methods of, you know, putting words out there.
Yeah.
So I have seen that. So there is some evidence that yes, a dream visit. And as Melissa says, the visitations, I've had a couple in a dream and one of them was 20 years ago, and I remembered it like it's yesterday.
Right.
So that's a major component to, if you want to know, did I have a dream visit, think about it. And was it much more vivid than your dreams usually are? That's a good indication that you've had one. As far as convincing a skeptic, that's another story altogether.
Well, sometimes, history is full of evidential you know, dreams where a deceased loved one comes to the dreamer and gives specific information. For instance, where a will was hidden. You know, there are some famous cases like that. You know, one in particular where the deceased explained to the dreamer that the will was sewn into the lining of the sport jacket and told them which sport jacket and where to go, and they uncovered it and solved. So that's a pretty strong piece of evidence, you know. I mean, of course, then, as Tom said, you could always come back to the psi, super psi theory that it's somehow the this was a... communication of transference of thought from an information field, but that's also preposterous. So I think that those kind of things are evidential, and people have been doing studies with dreams for decades, not having anything to do with survival, but to show that while people were sleeping, their minds can travel to other places and they could read codes and different things, and so. It's important. There is evidence, more than a scintilla,
I guess you're right. And interesting when you say that isn't it always, not always, but isn't it sometimes the case that when a skeptic says, oh, it's just this, the just this that he describes is way more fantastic than
right.
what you're
right.
trying to...
That's a foolish thing.
Yeah. Oh, they're just... reading your mind. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
That's just what my mother said when I was sitting in the other room overhearing a reading that she and my sister were having with a medium. And the medium was talking about giving the name of the fellow that my daughter was dating and talking about love and marriage. And my mother and my sister going, I don't know who that is. I don't know. And then afterwards I said, that was Kevin. And my mother said, oh, she was just reading your mind. Well, I wasn't even in the room. And I thought that was pretty darn amazing.
It goes that she was just again.
I thought that was really remarkable, even if she was reading my mind. If that's possible, if we're going to buy one premise, why do we draw the line there?
I think the problem is that when you hear a story like you just described with the will sewn in the jacket, a lot of people then say, oh, well, then I can get this piece of information from them, and I can get this piece of, and not just with people, but with the scientists, too, is we seem to be barking up the wrong tree in trying to collect dependable evidence because we're making assumptions about how the other side works, and therein is where the problem lies, and therein is where the skeptics get their ammunition.
Yeah. Right.
That's a good point.
And so that is an argument that skeptics do make, as they say, okay, if it's true and mediums are really communicating with the dead, how come it's so inconsistent and how come the information is most often very, very vague? That's a valid point. It is very vague sometimes, and it is...
Depends on the medium.
Depends on the medium. But they're not aware of the true, the strong evidence and the research, of mediumship that shows that it's, inconceivable that they're just they're doing this. You can attribute this to like cold reading and so forth. And then on the other question of why is it more consistent? I wish I knew. More about that. I'm kind of conflicted because a lot of times, even with the strong mediums, you don't get extremely specific information all the time. I mean, you get it sometimes. I'm reading a book now about, actually it was a book that was written in the 30s by an afterlife researcher, well-respected, and he had a medium that he had the idea of, with the medium exhibited direct voice, which means that the voice was not coming from the medium herself, but from outside the medium. And he hooked up a transmitter, this was pretty inventive back in the 30s, to her chest with a one-way transmitter with a 150-foot wire. He went into an adjoining building, so there were many there's a great distance with several closed doors, and he was having these incredible conversations with people in spirit. These were all fellow researchers that were helping him, but he could hear it as, you know, like the common argument, well, how come it's not like a telephone call, you know, whatever. This was like a telephone call. It's hard for me to believe, but I respect the sources. So if that kind of stuff could happen, why doesn't that happen now? Whatever. We very rarely hear of cases like that. So it is, and like Fran said, the skeptic will say, well, you know, because, you know, that doesn't exist. So that's just fantasy, and you can't get, you know, specific information like that and direct voices, you know. Even he, you know, during this whole procedure kept wondering if it was he himself, there was some sort of a thought transference that he was producing the noises, or the medium was producing these voices and personalities from her own subconscious.
Does it use the medium's vocal cords?
No, you know, because he would also, as been done many times before, they gag the medium.
Right.
He held the throat, you know, while it was going on. He had a stethoscope on the chest to listen to vibrations. It was totally outside the medium.
You know? Right, but then she was needed, though. She was the conduit.
She was the conduit. It wouldn't happen, you know, without her. You know, so that's interesting. You know. Yeah.
Right. So they were taking all of the precautions of anything physical with the medium, but this happens as part of her energy field because it's outside of her. We always look at our body as our soul is inside of us, you know, and the Eastern cultures mostly believe that it's outside of us, and that explains the auras and our own energy field. And I think that Dean Radin did a great job a couple of years ago when he was describing how our energy crosses with the next person's energy, and that's how we have these psi moments that go on, telepathy and things like that. Yeah. So,
I think you're right. The medium is the energy source, one of the energy sources involved in this thing, because sometimes the comments would be the medium's energy is getting weaker, and that's why we're having a little bit of trouble, you know, getting through. You know, so that, yeah, it's not... definitely, it's probably not only the energy of the medium, but the energy of the investigator and the energy of the people on the other side as well.
Maybe your cell phone companies can learn from this.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes it's a pretty lousy connection.
Also, sometimes when these researchers were lining up on the other side because they all wanted to help, sometimes like one in particular wasn't talking, and so he asked the question of another researcher, "How come this one's not talking?" He said, "Well, he hasn't figured it, something to the effect that he hasn't figured it out yet." You know, it's something that not everybody can do. The most common thing, and we've already touched on it, that we hear is that mediums are frauds. I hear that. I read that. I hear that, you know, and people are just not, they just are totally ignorant of the evidence, and in their belief system, as was mine, that it couldn't, it's not logical, and therefore...
Well, and if you do encounter a fraudulent medium...
That doesn't help.
No, and I was going to say, yeah. in the atmosphere in which we're living right now, with it becoming so popular and so much of it on TV, it's increasing exponentially the number of fraudulent and underdeveloped mediums, making the job of the legitimate, highly evidential medium that much more difficult as this goes on and on and on. Yeah. So, of course, there's fuel for the fire for the skeptics.
Yeah. And you also have the fact that, you know, on our side, we are looking at the facts that we see and lining them up with the logic. And on the other side, the debunkers are just, they don't care about the facts. They just, it's bunk, it's bunk. You know, right. What about the facts? Bunk, bunk. You know, I mean, where's an argument when you're going to get up against a stone wall like
right.
that?
When we talk about reincarnation, most of the evidence, not considering any evidence like from past life regressions, but scientific research comes from the memories of past life children. And we know thousands and thousands and thousands of cases. So the skeptic says it's all ridiculous that these children are making up the stories for attention, possibly, or that the families are buying into it or even making up the story to get, more attention. And they're encouraging this. If you knew about the evidence, that's kind of preposterous, right? I mean,
yeah.
Thousands and thousands of children are making up the evidence, and the investigators are, they're taking the investigator to these houses in these remote areas to which the children have ever been, and they know the names of all the family members and how they died and who they are. But it's another case, right? It's similar to the mediumship. If you don't believe that it's possible, then, I mean, I certainly never knew about that kind of evidence until I read it.
Well, I know when I had a young student who talked about her other house with her other mommy, and the mother did not want to hear about this at all, but what we were allowed to tell me about your other house. Right. It was yellow, but I couldn't go too far with it. That would be unethical.
Hmm. And, there are cases. I mean, it could be the case here that, children, I'm not a psychologist, but you could, it could be imagination or making up an altered personality or ways of coping with things. I mean, those are the things that the skeptics will point to. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't take away from the evidential stuff. I mean, now, if you were able to follow that through as to do your own investigation, I mean, that would be interesting. So, then we talk about near-death experiences. So, of course, the classic argument is that all these people, the millions of people that have had near-death experiences, it's the product of a dying brain. It's oxygen deprivation, which produces hallucinations. So people think that they're traveling into these other realms and floating above their bodies, but in fact, it's just what happens when your brain starts to die.
That is a fact, or
Skeptical argument.
Be clear, Bob.
Right.
Well, I would point people.
Well, I'm doing a good job as a skeptic.
Yeah. Yeah. Change this show. Well, I'd point to Evan Alexander's book, particularly the appendix of the book, as he was a neurosurgeon, and he was a skeptic before he experienced it himself, and used to visit with patients who would tell him these same things, and he had his litany of dismissals that he would just read off, and now he's ashamed for doing that because he knows that, and like I say, I point to the appendix in his book where he gets into the medicine and the science of the brain and how it's impossible for a dying brain to do the things that you're explaining.
Right, and not only that, I mean, the argument is totally without merit. Because first of all, it's been shown that a lot of people have these NDEs when they've been measured and that there is no oxygen deprivation. And secondly, the skeptics point to the fact that these NDEs have been replicated in studies, where you deprive somebody of oxygen, and they report some of the things. But also, what they don't tell you is that most of these people are when they have these oxygen-deprived hallucinations, they're very discombobulated, to use a perfect word. They're not clear and lucid. They're sometimes thrashing about. They don't know where they are. They're very confused, and yet, if your brain is dying, would you expect clear thinking, logical, clear, lucid thinking? It's the opposite of what you would normally expect. And also, people in these laboratory-induced things, I mean, don't see deceased relatives and, don't see what's going on from a vantage point above their body and all that other stuff. So that they just ignore, that argument.
I just want to go back to what Tom was talking about with Evan's book. There is a part in his book where he took the excuses he used to give his patients, and I think there were 7 or 8 of them, canned things that neurosurgeons will give to people who claim to have had an NDE or seen their dead relatives or went to the other side. And he took each one of those in the book and explained why he was wrong.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really a good thing for people to read, and maybe even some of his colleagues, hopefully, would have read that.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. Well, same argument is also used for deathbed visions. There, the skeptics might have a little bit of a stronger point, because most of the people there, die very soon afterwards, and there's no interviewing or anything like that. But again, most of the people that are in that dying state do report, again, the same thing, these clear thinking things at times when they're both mentally and physically incapacitated. That certainly would show something else, was going on. So, what about EVP? We talk about that electronic voice phenomenon, right? So the skeptic will say that's nothing more than stray signals. And we know that our brains are hardwired to make sense out of gibberish, and that's what you're hearing.
Well, you know how I feel about EVP, yeah. But and I have encountered skeptics within my family who denied hearing anything. And I was incredibly amazed that when they said, I couldn't hear anything, that they did not then follow up with, so what was it? Wouldn't one always say, well, what was it? What was I supposed to hear? But instead it was a cut and dry, I didn't hear a thing.
that
spoke volumes to me.
Interesting thing about, we went to a talk by Dan Sturgis, who's a paranormal investigator. And I thought it was fascinating that in the years that he's been doing this, the only evidential experience he's had is EVP. He's never seen an apparition. He's, you watch these ghost hunter shows and you're waiting for the figure to go across, and he's never seen any of that, but he has a catalog of EVPs, some of it very, very clear.
Yeah.
So the skeptic will just deny hearing anything.
Yeah, but then, so the argument against skeptics, too, first of all, there have been a lot of studies in EVP where the stray noise has been ruled out. And secondly, if their argument is that we are inclined to make sense out of something that doesn't exist, and I agree that we are hardwired to do that. But what about the times that everybody hears the same thing?
Yeah. What
if you play it for 20 people? And do you mean everybody in that, all 20 people have their brains work exactly the same way, where they're interpreting that as the same exact words? That seems highly unlikely, right?
Yeah.
So, and also there are messages that come through sometimes that are evidential, and you could check. So we're delinquent in another break.
Yes, we're delinquent.
Okay, so we're going to go to another break. We'll come back. More to talk about. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's KAMLAK.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Welcome back to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. We're talking about things that skeptics say. What about, have you ever heard that, you know, we all talk about signs. A lot of people have said that signs are all coincidences. What would you say, Melissa, to that?
I think, again, it's how it makes you feel. I would also say to the skeptic, I don't know if I mean, that what Brian had said earlier, maybe ask them questions. Well, how did that make you feel? You know, if it made you feel lousy or it wasn't a sign.
The skeptics wouldn't put any credence in it, how does it make you feel? Because that's just showing, that's like playing into the skeptics, you know, that it's not real, but if it makes you feel good, then it's... You know.
I guess then if I were to go into a little... Is it spiel or spiel?
And then if you're from New York or not.
If you're from Brooklyn, it's spiel. But if you're not, then it's spiel.
I could let my listener know that when there's something that you find to be significant and you take it as a sign and it makes you feel really, really good and it's doing no harm to anyone except making you feel really good, wouldn't you rather feel really good? And if it makes you think of your loved one, isn't that a good thing? So there's no negative aspects to it. If you want to think of it as a coincidence, and it does that probably doesn't make you feel very good.
Right.
I'd rather feel good.
I think that there there clearly are coincidences, and there clearly are signs that are easily written off as coincidence. But there are signs that in no way, shape, or form can you explain away. So you know, to have a discussion with a debunker or a skeptic about this, I don't think you'd go any place mm-hmm. with the discussion, because they're just going to dig their heels in, you know, show it to me. Right. You know, and you can't. It just has to happen to them. Wasn't there a well-known debunker or skeptic that recently had his own experience and he kind of moved to who was
that?
About a year ago. It wasn't Randy. Randy
Michael Sherman.
Amazing, crazy.
Michael Sherman had an occurrence. But I mean, I agree. I mean, there's a difference. There are signs, and then there are signs.
Yeah.
I mean, if I find a penny on the floor, I mean, I could say, oh, yes, that's my loved one sending me a penny. But bear in mind that people throw, they don't even pick up pennies anymore. They're so devalued, and there's pennies all over the place. So I personally wouldn't put much credence in that as a sign. I'm not saying it's not, but not much evidence. But then, like the time Fran and I walked into the kitchen, and there's 12 hi-hats, and they start blinking on and off for a good 20 minutes in different patterns, and then I go and check out, have all the switches and everything checked out, and it never happened before and it's never happened since, and there's nothing wrong with the switches. That's the strongest sign that I take that as a sign, because you know, we were asking for a communication and we got one. So so I think that but I agree with you, that's something that you're not going to get very far with debunkers.
No.
When you talk about signs.
And I don't like to devalue my sign by even sharing it with them. I don't need that.
That's a good attitude. You know, you're not trying to convince anybody, right? You know, it's a personal experience.
I know, and on this whole belief, I'm happy the way it's going right now. I wouldn't really want to be a part of popular belief.
I know. I mean,
that's like a secret society.
That's a fun thing when they go, oh, you're not going to change my mind. And I said, well, I don't care.
Right. That's a good answer. I'm going to use that. Oh, I don't care.
And there's also, you know, what proof do you have that there's an afterlife? What proof do you have that there's not?
I like that one.
You know, so
I think
my lack of proof is just as strong as yours.
The interesting thing is that these people still join in some religious ceremony, as if that's some sort of proof of something. So they'll blindly follow some religion, but they'll argue with you about facts that you have.
Yeah.
That's what blows me away. Cause
well, if you're open-minded and you evaluate everything, I think that there is stronger evidence suggesting that there is an afterlife than there is evidence that there is not. You know, I can't come up with evidence that there is not. So
right.
That's basically what it boils down to.
We should leave it at that.
Okay.
Let's leave it at that, and let's do our little wind-up of the show. So now we're going to ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of the recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Veronica James, Alex Hanna, Ginger Quinlan, Trevor McKinney, Lauren Ramnath, Rich LeBlay, Vince Mattia, Isabel Ginsberg, Diane Archangel, Doreen Malloy, James Rafferty, Fred Feinstein, Matt Mello, Donna Mello, Miriam Pierzga, David Haith, Michael Tim, Glenna Irwin, and Stanley Newland. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.